NASA 557, contact tower 128.15.
Caution, caution. Manual, fuel, manual, fuel.
I'm John Golia.
I'm Greg Fife.
And I'm Todd Curtis.
And we are the Flight Safety Detectives.
Between us, we have over a century of aviation accident investigation and safety experience to draw on as we discuss issues that affect all of us.
So we are qualified to share our perspectives on accidents and incidents and what can be learned from them for the future.
We're proud to say that we have two sponsors that really relate to the topic of aviation safety: the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, or PAMA, and Avemco Insurance. Later on in the show, we'll tell you how you can get a 5% discount on your insurance just for listening to the show.
We don't just dissect the official reports. In every episode, we identify safety issues and take the mystery out of accident investigations.
So maybe pilots and their planes can have safer flights ahead.
The Flight Safety Detectives is bringing on a new sponsor, Piston Powered, a power-by-the-hour program for owners of piston-powered aircraft that can stabilize the long-term costs of owning your airplane.
Well, hello, John. It is another episode of Flight Safety Detectives. It feels like forever since we've been together, and guess what? We are together, except you and I are flying tandem without Todd.
Yeah, Todd's out of the country, I believe.
Yeah, that's a good place for him. You know, that'll keep him out of trouble. So anyway, well, it's good to be with you. Actually, we were just together in Washington, D.C. this past week. So we're gonna get to why we were in D.C. here shortly. But, you know, again, the last couple of weeks has been disastrous to an extent, especially on the general aviation side of the house, with a number of accidents, the one being most prominent, happened down in Scottsdale with a Honda jet that unfortunately killed a number of folks, including the driver of a car who happened to be at the wrong place at the wrong time at the end of the runway when this Honda jet appears to have tried to abort during the takeoff. Whether he aborted late or there was some issue with the aircraft is yet to be determined by the NTSB. But John, I'll tell you, you know, when you see these kinds of accidents, and this happens to be the first fatality involving a Honda jet, so that too will be of interest, because there have been a number of runway excursions with the Honda jet in the past. I've actually looked at two of them. And so I think the airplane's going to be under scrutiny just because of its history. But the concern that I have, given the fact that the airplane was doing 133 knots on the runway and then apparently the pilot aborted, it did slow down some, but went through the boundary fence doing well over 70 knots, which is still a lot of energy in a massive airplane like that. So, you know, and you're always preaching at the end of our show about pre-flight, and I would expect that investigators will be looking at the pre-flight actions of the pilot in preparing this aircraft for the flight, to see if, in fact, there may have been either a mechanical malfunction that was missed or overlooked, or was there some other thing similar to Hanscom and the G4, where maybe the gust locks or something else was missed, or maybe it was a pre-flight action that wasn't taken to have created a mechanical issue that prevented the pilot or inhibited the pilot from being able to fly the airplane normally.
Yeah, the very first thing I thought of when I saw the sequence of events in that was Hanscom, because the events as they occur going down the runway to the time he went through the fence mirror the accident right here in Hanscom. I'm back in Boston today. So right here in Hanscom, it mirrors that accident. So Paying attention for your planning and your pre-flight, as I say every time. And I say it every time because as I go through the accidents, looking at accidents for this show, looking for things to educate our people with, our pilots or mechanics or whoever, educate them, showing them what other people have made mistakes with, I see over and over and over the failure to do a good pre-flight. And it goes all the way down to the 172s, and it goes all the way up to the airliners, right? There's people that just don't do a good pre-flight. And we really need to change that. I don't know how. AOPA has also taken up the banner for the last couple of months. They've been saying that in their magazine. In their magazine just, I think it was this month's issue. I don't always get to read them in the month that they come out because of my schedule, but they actually talk about a twin-engine airplane that was flying, trying to break the 500-kilometer, 1,000-kilometer records, and they did the 500 portion, and they were turning around to do the return 500, and the photographer was taking pictures of the airplane, and he signaled the crew to center the pedals, the rudder, and the rudder didn't move, and he signaled again for them to set dirt. It didn't move, and they indicated that the pedals were centered. So they shut down and did an investigation, and the rods to the rudder were never connected at the factory.
How do you get an airplane in service? How do you do a flight control check and allow this airplane to fly in service for some period of time without ever noticing that the rudder was not hooked up?
Yep. And that's why I tell people in my preaching at the end of the show, touch your airplane, wiggle your flight controls. If somebody had wiggled the rudder on that airplane, and I'm sure it might have been difficult unless you were tall, but in any event, if you had touched your airplane, you would have noticed that that was not, it moved too freely.
Yeah, well, you and I both know, and we've seen it, we read reports, we talk about it on this show, that yes, pre-flights are, a mandatory requirement for every pilot, regardless of aircraft. And to just go through the motions and walk around and go, yep, the wings are still there, yep, they're still attached, and yeah, the tail's still there, and the prop doesn't have a nick, and, the landing gear is, still upright, and the wheels are still pumped up. It takes a hell of a lot more than that. And like you said, unless you actually move the ailerons up and down, you look at the hinges or hinge pins or whatever you're looking at, you look at the bolts, the nuts, make sure that it's all there. The assembly is all there. And that's why I would encourage every aircraft owner, general aviation aircraft owner, is really to familiarize themselves with the maintenance manual. It is a very big document, of course. You're not studying it to do the maintenance per se, but you should go through each section of the manual, of that maintenance manual. Look at the parts that comprise the aileron or the aileron system. Look at the parts that comprise the landing gear and landing gear system, so that when you do your pre-flight, you know what you're looking for. To just go out there and go, yeah, there looks like to be a nut and a bolt. I'm working an accident right now with our colleague Jason, where the nuts and the bolts used on the aircraft in question are improper. They're not even made for that aircraft, and we think some of them have been bought at a hardware store. Again, you cannot just replace bolts, and you know this better than anybody else. Bolts, nuts, screws, if they are not of a specific grade, they will degrade and they will fail in flight at the worst possible time.
Now, most people don't know that aircraft hardware has rolled threads, not cut threads. 99% of the hardware you buy in the stores, it's cut threads. It has much lower tolerances, and it's susceptible to cracking. The threads are. airline or aviation hardware is rolled, it's a big difference in the strength between those two thread patterns. Even though the nut may look the same, it's probably not unless it's an approved aircraft part. And one of the other things that I've taken to doing lately, Greg, I'm going to raise this issue with NAFI when at the next meeting we go to, if they reschedule that one in Florida, about maintenance people should be working hand in glove with the people who bring the airplanes to them for maintenance. Now, I was a safety officer for a charter company. I went to some of the repair stations that we had that repaired our airplanes, and all they ever did was turn over a quarter inch worth of paper and give a salute. And they relied upon the pilots to do the walkarounds. And I've questioned the pilots on some of them. And I think I've said it on the show before. They open the panels, but they don't know what they're looking at because nobody has told them what to look at. The manufacturer says you open up, look around. Well, that's not very good guidance. And I think if we can get the maintenance people to protect their customers, who the hell wants to kill their customers? Right? You got this guy coming to your shop to fix his airplane. Take care of him. Make sure he knows how to fly his airplane. They'll do a pre-flight. You're not going to help him flying it. But pre-flight, show, tell him what to look for to keep him out of it.
And you bring up a good point, John, about NAFI and flight instructors. It's incumbent upon flight instructors, especially with primary students, and then reinforce it as they're giving training to a commercial or ATP or whatever, that there are things on the airplane that are just telltale signs that something is wrong and it's been wrong for a while. Smoking rivets. I guarantee if you and I were to walk out on the ramp at a large flight school and just interview student pilots learning how to fly and ask them about smoking rivets, other than some guys going, well, does that mean they were on fire? Other than them saying something ridiculous like that, they won't understand what a smoking rivet is and what that really means in the overall strength and integrity of that part of the aircraft.
So now you open the door, we should at least say smoking rivets are indications of loose rivets. And it means they're vibrating in there. Sometimes there's a gray streak, which often indicates residue of aluminum that's been vibrating loose. And sometimes it could be residue from something that's inside the airplane. But it deems necessary to take a good look at that. And I know people that don't, they just walk right over it. Right, including pilots, including airline pilots. I just had a friend of mine send me a picture of a CFM engine with two major pieces of attachment, rivet type attachment, Hylock fittings that hold the cowling together on an airplane. Two of them missing, and they've been missing for a while. You know, maintenance people can tell if something just happened or something that's been around for a while. Because there's telltale signs. And the telltale signs on this airplane indicate that those were missing for a while. How many walkarounds did pilots do on that airplane? Typically, an airplane that size is going to get at least eight walkarounds a day, eight flights a day. Some, if it was Southwest, it would be 10 or 11. Right? And they're sitting there staring you in the face. You don't even have to look. And I also have a picture. Well, the picture's coming to me. I saw it. When I was in Australia, did a mechanic going up to an airplane and found cracked wheel bolts on the airplane. The pilots are supposed to look at those on every flight.
It's, and again, that's why, we do get email and they keep, asking, why do we keep talking about preflights? Why? Because again, every single day there is some sort of event that has a relationship to either a poor preflight or no preflight. And bad things have developed and happened because of those two inactions. And again, if you read the Federal Aviation Regulations, for every pilot, regardless of what you fly, including a lawn chair with balloons on it, 91.3 says that you, as the pilot in command, are the responsible authority. You can't point the fingers at the mechanic. You can't point the fingers at the FAA. the FBO, or anybody else. The only place you can point those fingers is at yourself, because you are responsible. And given that responsibility, you must make sure that every time you get near an aircraft with the intent to fly, that that aircraft is in a sound and safe condition, not only for you, not only for the passengers, but the people that are on the ground underneath your flight path. Because if something happens and you go barreling through the roof of someone's house, they're not going to be happy.
How true. How true.
So, well, you know, we were fortunate enough. You because of your schedule and my schedule, we are like ships passing in the night a lot of times. But we were together in Washington this past week because there was an awards presentation by the National Aeronautic Association.
You're famous.
Yeah, well, I'm only following in your footsteps, my friend, because the award that I won this year, or actually it was for 2023, the McDonald Distinguished Statesman and Stateswomen or Woman of the Year in Aviation, I won it in 2023. I was with you when you won it several years ago. It's a great honor, and I was so humbled to be in that room because they combined the awards from 2023 with this year's award winners. And it's funny how, you know, you and I have been around the block for quite a long time. A number of our friends were also recognized with that award. In my award class for 2023, there were a number of folks that
Jim Viola, the head of the Helicopter Association, a longtime helicopter pilot, FAA official on helicopters, a great guy.
Yep. Well, he's Bobby a good Wells, friend of ours.
Bobby Wells has been at American Airlines for a while as a safety officer and a human factors person.
Yep.
You know,
our friend, five-time shuttle astronaut pilot, Hoot Gibson.
Yep.
I've worked with Hoot. I've known Hoot for a long time. He is the closest of friends. I was very honored that he was an award winner, as well as retired General Ron Fogelman. I love General Fogelman. I mean, his accomplishments, his decorum, his stature is, you know, second to none. He's an impressive individual. And to be with him, and then I think it was Tracy, or Trish Gilbert.
Yeah, Trish.
Well, when I look at these people, you know, I'm blessed that not only you, but two of our colleagues that we've worked with and I've known for a long time, Cassandra Bosco and Shelley Seamy. You guys stepped up to nominate me, and I'm very, very honored that and proud to have received this award. But when you're in that room, not only with these award winners, but there are other awards that are given by the NAA, and they're very prestigious awards recognizing individuals or a group of individuals for outstanding accomplishments in aviation. And when you hear the stories of each of these individuals, I just wish everybody in aviation could sit through these award presentations to really hear about, quote, heroes, people that are selfless, that give their all in aviation. A friend of mine and a friend of ours received one of the awards, the Frank G. Brewer Award. It's really given to somebody that dedicates their professional life and their personal life to furthering aviation, especially for young people. And a friend of ours who's a 777 captain for United Airlines, Glendon Fraser, was the recipient because he has started so many programs for underserved kids, starting in elementary school. And when you hear his story and you hear how he got started, how he was fostered and mentored through aviation, these are people that are true heroes. They should be revered because they give up their time. I'm mentoring a number of students. I'm trying to push kid aviation in the elementary schools because we need to backfill all of us gray hairs that are at some point going to give up aviation and retire. I probably won't, but we need to backfill at least your position at some point, John, because I know that you're going to want to sit back and enjoy life. But why we can mentor people, I want to mentor these young people, get them enthusiastic so that they have the same passion that a lot of us have and will continue even through the tough times.
Yeah. And there was quite a bit of awards given out that night. There's the Stinson Trophy and the Whitman Trophy. Just two more. And then that story about those 11 military people that did that rescue to try to save the couple of kids. That was truly amazing.
I'll tell you, I just wish that the public, the 335 million people in the United States, could hear that story. These young servicemen, Air Force pilots, medics, going into a hellacious war zone to help two seriously injured young kids. It took 5 hours for them to get this mission up running, going in. They had one of the helicopters had a problem, but the pilot was able to continue anyway, get in, get these kids, and get out without getting shot up. And the way the story was told by the general, I'll tell you, there wasn't a dry eye in that house, I can imagine. These young people, and I don't think any of those airmen were older than what, 28 maybe,
Yeah,
but
there we go.
several of them were a lot younger, and for them they were just, I mean, they were so humble, they were grateful, they didn't know that they should be honored for this because that's just their job. And it was an amazing evening listening to those stories. And then of course it was an amazing evening because there were a lot of top name people. I mean, I had the good fortune with you sitting at the table that one of the guests at the table was the former, what, Assistant Joint Chief of Staff. And I mean, there were some powerful people there, all coming together without any kind of rank, but all coming together for the common, and that was at least honoring people both in aviation and in aerospace and the accomplishments of a lot of these people that you don't normally hear about. They're in the shadows, but you know that they're doing the work that, it really takes aviation and aerospace to the next level.
Yeah, I agree fully.
And, I mean, the National Aeronautic Association, of course, they're jointly married to the records group, FIA or FAI. And so anytime there's a world record set or whatever, of course, it's vetted through the organization. And I would encourage our listeners and viewers to go to the NAA and become a member. Because once you read what they do on their website, the programs that they foster, the awards for recognizing people or organizations, and what they do to really sponsor people in aviation, it is definitely beneficial. And I would encourage everybody to go to the website and become a member because it is a small organization that represents a big mission, and that is identifying a lot of, I mean, I'm not the only one out there doing accident investigation and promoting safety. There are a lot of other people, but the fact of the matter is that they vet all of the winners amongst all of the nominees. And I'm very honored that this year I was an award recipient of this, but I'm even more honored that our friends and colleagues like Jim Biola and Hoot and General Fogelman. I mean, these are the people that, we all have a common mission, and that is to make aviation and aerospace better and safer.
Yes. And one last thing, we have a new sponsor. One just came on. We've had him for less than a month. And you're looking to buy a new airplane. So I know you were looking at some of these programs. What did you find out?
Well, this program, a lot of corporate pilots, corporate flight departments, charter operators, and that kind of thing, when they buy jets or very expensive turboprop airplanes, you can buy programs, you can buy maintenance programs. So you pay a flat fee, it covers certain parts and components of the aircraft and that kind of thing. Piston Power has come up with a scheme, and it's a scheme in a good way, not a scheme to take your money. But they've come up with a scheme for piston-powered airplanes. That is the general aviation fleet, if you will. They have a program where you have three options. So I've been looking, of course, to get another airplane, and this, I think, is perfect. Even though I've been an airplane owner in the past, it's a perfect way to at least get the airplane into a routine maintenance program. And the Piston Power provides for three different programs, John. You can buy on a flat fee, engine coverage. And we all know, those of us that have owned airplanes or currently own an airplane now, there's always something going wrong. Not catastrophic, but just wrong. Little piddly things with the engine. The first program is an engine-only program that you pay a flat fee. It's a 3-year or 600-hour coverage, and if something breaks on it, with the exception of the consumables, and the group thinks that rubber is a consumable, so if your alternator belt breaks, you're going to pay for that. But if the alternator fails, it's covered. So it's really engine-only, and then you can also add on an accessory package to that. So now basically the front end of your aircraft is covered. The second program they had, and I was looking at this, and this is for both scheduled and unscheduled maintenance. So you're going to take the aircraft in for a 100-hour annual inspection. Those are scheduled programs. But let's say you do break down, you have a problem with the engine somewhere, they will cover any cost to fix whatever it is that's caused you to be aircraft on the ground, AOG. The program that I like, that as soon as I get the airplane, I will probably invest in, is the third program, and that is basically spinner to tail. Not only do they cover the firewall forward and everything in between to include the propeller, but the third program also covers the airframe. So anything that goes wrong with that airframe, anything that goes wrong within that airframe. So you're talking avionics. And so that program, I think, is probably the best and most cost-effective for somebody like me, because I don't want to have to get nickeled and dimed and deal with it. I'd rather pay a flat fee with the presence and at least the comfort knowing that the entire aircraft is covered. If something happens, I can get it fixed wherever I want. It's kind of like these car programs that you see on TV where you're paying a flat fee, except one, this is higher quality since it is aviation. But two, the fact is that you have your choice of being able to take the aircraft to either your routine or regular mechanic, take it to a service center. It does not matter. It will be covered. And I think in the long run, when you look at the cost-benefit analysis, if they're covering the engine and you're paying, let's say you have an IO550N, which that's the engine that's typically in a Cirrus or maybe upgraded into a 210 or something. To buy a new engine, that new engine, you buy it brand new, it's about $82,000. To get it overhauled, it's somewhere north of, $50,000, $60,000 easily. If you buy the program, they get big discounts. So, the whole program price, they take out reserves and everything else, it's going to cost you maybe 20 grand over the life of 3 years and or 600 hours. So I would behoove our listeners and the viewers to go to pistonpower.com. If you are a general aviation owner, look at their programs, talk to them about pricing, and see what they can do for you. Because, again, I want the peace of mind to know that I don't have to worry about these nickel and dime bills, or if the aircraft, if I'm on a trip or one of my friends flying the airplane's on a trip and something happens, I just want to say, take it to wherever you need to take it to get it fixed, because it'll be paid for.
That seems to be an impressive program. I was looking over it, and it doesn't seem to have a lot of exclusions, because that's what I
No.
want. What are the exclusions? It didn't seem to have a lot. The rubber, so hoses and belts. That's not a deal breaker. But throw a rod in an engine, and that's an expensive piece of repair work.
Exactly. And even with all the avionics in the airplane right now, there are some of that stuff is still under warranty, but if you have an older airplane, you've retrofitted stuff, or you've been operating an engine now, you've gone through an overhaul, you're on the backside of it, you have no warranty. These are the kinds of programs I like, because I do not want to worry about, the maintenance or anything else. I just want to know that either I or someone else can take the airplane, get it fixed, and it's taken care of. And it definitely makes my accounting a lot better as far as bookkeeping, because I know that's a fixed cost.
Right, that changes the unexpected. It just levels it right out. Just like leasing a car that you don't own, levels the money out. You're not worried about depreciation. You're just that's all it is. Monthly payment or an annual payment, however you do it. Yeah, it looks good.
Absolutely.
I was looking through some of the material that you had, and it does look like a halfway decent program. We'll see. We
So,
could have them on the show.
we will have them on the show so we can ask the real questions that I've asked on the phone and talking to the folks. So, go to pistonpower.com and take a look at the programs, because I think you might find it, especially those of you who are getting into either a brand new airplane, you're a first-time aircraft owner, or even just transitioning to another aircraft. These are the types of programs that you should be looking at so that you can tame all of your costs with aircraft ownership. So, okay, John. Well, I think we've exhausted our time here, but it's always good to see you. I'm glad that we were able to get together last week in Washington. And I'm sure that we'll have something to bust Todd about when he finally decides to join us from wherever he is. So, with that, I will leave you with our last word.
Yeah, and as usual, my last word, again, based on experience and what I see and pouring through accident reports to put on this show, I pre-plan your flight. Just j last week, I asked at the table at that event, I asked one of the young pilots there if he pre-planned an engine failure on takeoff. One, and there was two of them standing there. One did, and one didn't. That's the first step you should look at. If I lose an engine on takeoff, which we all know is where they're going to happen, vast majority happen on takeoff because that's the maximum strain on the engine and the propeller. You got to know where you're going to put it down. You got to consciously remember not to try to go back to the airport because that's guaranteed fatal. You're guaranteed going to crash. Look for a controlled crash. Look before you take off where you're going to put the airplane. All right, so do a good job of pre-planning for your airplane for your flight. Make sure you check the weather here, there, and everything in between. When you get out to the airplane, touch your airplane when you're doing your pre-flight. I tell some people, take a flashlight with you. The flashlight, the beam, and all but the brightest sunlight will guide your eyes to those areas that you want to look at. So, and I factually, I think that the reason why that wheel hardware was missed by so many pilots and the attachment points to the cowling were because they just looked in general and not focus, and flashlight will help you focus. You got to do a good job on the ground. This stuff, when it happens and surprises you in the air, oftentimes leads to lousy outcomes. So we got to really take good care of the airplane on the ground. And again, the story earlier about the rudder being disconnected from the factory. That's amazing. That's amazing. And I have pictures of a Boeing 747 that had the drag links on the nose gear came out of the factory with the nut wasn't installed on the bolt. And inside of, I forget how many hours, not that many, the bolt backed out and they had landing gear jam. I mean, this stuff happens. These complicated airplanes. And sometimes things get missed. You've got to take control of those situations yourself. So please, please do a very thorough pre-planning, very thorough pre-flight. And again, when you get in the air, there's the other one that I see too often. When you get in the air, put that head on a swivel. There's a lot of new people flying, depending on where you are, what airport you're in. There's a lot of new people out there, and new people make mistakes. So don't become part of their mistake. Put your head on a swivel, know what's going on around you. And please, please fly safely.
Thank you for checking out our show. We really value our listeners and subscribers. Our podcast gets ranked by you and how much you like it. So please give us 5 stars in your podcast platform.
We want to keep in contact with you. We are on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and of course, YouTube.
You can email the show at flightsafetydetectives@gmail.com. By the way, if you're on YouTube, we're really working on growing the channel, and it helps if you all send in comments. Please do that. And we read all the comments.
And be sure to subscribe. Remember, if you're in the market for aviation insurance, you can save 5% with Avemco just by mentioning our show. Visit them at www.avemco.com. That's it for this episode of the Flight Safety Detective. Until the next episode, fly safe.